Okay, so next up, to kind of build on what we've seen so far, and you know, we have a context, we've started by considering what Shechita is, just as far as the role that it plays in our hashgafic and halachic mindset, and we noted that that was certainly impacted by the question of who shechts, and we saw that on one hand, it starts off with the implication that basically it's a free-for-all, everyone can shecht. Sounds like a pretty dangerous society, but that everyone is kosher to shecht, which could have given us the impression that Shechita has no real status, that it requires anybody of any particular label, just that it has a right way and a wrong way, and as long as it's done the right way, so then we are okay. But then we saw that it's not absolute, that this is counterbalanced by the next Mishnah, which tells us that an Akum is not kosher to shecht. And we saw two very different angles to consider that from. Is it that there are requirements, that we do require at least that somebody have some connection to the broader concept of Shechita, even maybe if it's a loose connection, because we know that a katan had to be brought into the picture somehow, but an Akum was outside that picture? Or we saw the other possibility, the Rambam's portrayal, that really everyone can shecht, it's just that there is a external concern that is imposed upon the issue of Akum, that an Akum cannot shecht because he is suspect of Avodah Zarah, and that's not just a gzeira, it's a special din in the Torah that can be derived from the pasuk that tells us we have to worry that he shouldn't invite us to eat from his zavach. So within that framework, we now want to consider, are there other categories? And that brings us into the difficult topic of mummer. And that will involve a number of different aspects. We'll talk about different kinds of mummer, talk also about the category of apikoros, the category of akusi, and how they relate to each other. And these are some pretty fundamental things. This will go to the yesod of what it means to be a part of the observant community, what it means to be a part of the Jewish philosophical community, and what are the implications of going one way or another. So let's try to get some basic issues on the table today, and hopefully by tomorrow we'll be able to take them further. So first of all, let's try to figure out what we're talking about. So what is a mummer? How do we understand what a mummer is? And we know already that there's more than one type, right? So how would you define a mummer?
Someone that doesn't follow halacha.
So somebody that doesn't follow halacha. That could be true, but Gilad's like, I think I need to add a little more to this.
Maybe like
habitually? Okay, so we're not talking about the one time of era, it seems. But we're talking about somebody who habitually doesn't keep halacha. Is that a definition that...
doesn't live.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Well, I know it's the same thing. Don't assume it's the same thing. Give me your own formulation.
Living within like the halachic world, I guess.
Living within the halachic... Okay, well, let's try to tease it out. So what do you think is the key element there?
Well, living with it, because it's similar to habitual. Like, if a mumar, someone that doesn't, I guess, like, every single day, it's not that they don't, like, it's not halachas, like, a non-factor in their lives.
No. Well, I think that's pretty different than habitual. I think you're saying two different things. They might both have elements of relevance here, but it's one thing to say somebody is completely separated from the halachic community as far as his own practice. I think what Gilad was saying is that he simply has not created a pattern for himself of caring about a halacha, the halacha.
From my answer from the Gemara community, it seems to be that you could be like more with specific halachas. Like, it's not just like a lack of caring for all halacha. It's like he's... he habitually doesn't do a specific halakha, he's in a specific area.
Okay, so maybe these are two different types, right? So as we see, right, well, it's also two different types. Like there's two different types of two different types. Because first what Gila was saying is that maybe a mummer can be a mummer in a particular area. Right? That if a mummer has a certain attitude towards a specific halacha, so maybe that's a kind of mummer. We'll call a mummer l'davar echad. Right? As opposed to somebody who is not only lax regarding one specific halacha, but to go towards Sam's definition more, has removed himself from the halachic community completely. And doesn't care about halacha at all. And then within that, so then you mentioned a second ago another way to divide things into two categories. And so you have a mummer l'teyavon and a mummer l'haches. So what's the difference between a mummer l'teyavon and a mummer l'haches?
If you're in a situation where it's just as easy for him to do it the proper way, l'teyavon won't do it the proper way.
Okay, so that's a detail about the mummer l'teyavon. So right, you're right, but let's define the mummer l'teyavon. Right, it's also interesting here. You know that word taiva has now resurfaced again. Right, but what do we mean by a mummer l'teyavon? And again, it's unusual because it's bad here, but maybe similar to the way the Torah uses it in Parshas Re'eh, maybe it's not the worst. You know, that's, recall that we always talk about taiva as being bad, and then when we saw the description of Shechita in Parshas Re'eh, it sounded like taiva was at least tolerable, maybe better than the alternative, because the Gemara is saying you should only eat meat for taiva and not for something other than that. Now we're seeing here also, taiva, te'avon, is not the worst you can be. So what's the definition here, Yossi?
Just seems to be a distinction based on intent.
Okay.
If someone, the primary reason why they're doing this, is it to, as an act of rebellion against Hashem, or is it just they're giving into their bodily desires or whatever you want to call it?
Yeah, so that's correct, but I would also say, you know, maybe we need a more powerful word than intent. It's the question of attitude. Right, that essentially somebody just is so interested in doing a certain action, so that's why he does it, because in the case of, let's say, prohibited foods, he wants that prohibited food, and that desire is going to overcome him, as opposed to somebody who's a mummer l'haches. A mummer l'haches is somebody who is going to be so defiant of halacha that he's looking to rebel through his behavior.
And I said, I mean, they're both intentional, what their intent is, what their attitude is.
Right. So, I always think about the nature of intent, but somebody goes, it speaks to a broader thing, right? It speaks to their entire attitude. And why should the halacha distinguish between the two? An avera is an avera, so why do we care? Yeah.
It's worse, I would think, because you're doing it just to spite Hashem.
Okay, so granted that it's worse, but does that matter for our purposes, or for what purposes should it matter?
We talked about that Kavana and when it came to Akum, mm-hmm. Shechita with a Jew.
What you're saying is that maybe the issue with Shechita in these cases is that you bring a certain intent and graft it onto the process.
Yeah.
And that the mummer l'teyavon doesn't necessarily have that intent.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting here as we go into El, as we continue away into El, rather. So I think the Bala Tanya says in one place, he has a line, which I always thought was a little harsh, that says that really, on some level, every avera is kfira. Every avera is a denial of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Because if you believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam is watching, so then you wouldn't do the Aver. So I thought that was a little harsh, because it doesn't seem to totally describe human nature perfectly, because we often do things that are bad for us, even though we fully believe that they will have a negative consequence. So we're capable of following a harmful path in the short term because of our taiva, because of whatever short-term thinking has taken over. And we're pulled down that path, even though, if you were to ask, it's not that we don't believe there's going to be a negative consequence. We fully are aware of the negative consequence, but the taiva overtakes. So, you know, is it a real reflection of human nature that when somebody does an aveira, he really believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not watching? Maybe he believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mocho. You know, the Gemara says that we're not supposed to believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a vasran. And, you know, even though we believe that he's a rachman, as Rabbi Cohen was just talking about, is mocho the solech. It's a difference between being a rachman and a mocho and being a vasran. A vasran is somebody who just doesn't care. It's okay. I don't notice it. But mochel is somebody who is willing to forgive the offense. Rachman is somebody who has compassion. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has rachmanis on us, but he's not the mevater. It's not like it's nothing. So a person is willing to let himself do an avir. Okay, so he has some type of thought process that disconnects him from the consequences. But it's not that he is necessarily disbelieving of it. Okay, and so we've seen already a couple of distinctions. You could be a mummer for one thing, you could be a mummer for everything. You could be a mummer who is guided by taiva, and you could be a mummer who is more than that, a mummer lahachis, a mummer who is looking, so to speak, as hard as it's mad, looking to anger the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, within these distinctions, there is some crossover also, right? So we know that it's possible for somebody to be a mummer for one thing, and yet for that to have the halachic significance of being a mummer for everything. So where do we find such a discussion? At least two cases, possibly.
Shabbos.
And what?
Kashrus.
Kashrus, not necessarily. Kashrus, that would kind of negate a lot of our discussions here. Right, so, but Shabbos, yes. And what else?
Rabbi Marit said, Achila, if you're like a member of Avodah Zarah.
Avodah Zarah. Okay, so Avodah Zarah, so what, let's think about these two for a second. So why are they singled out or doubled out? Right, so why would a mumra l'avodah zarah have a different status than a mumra for shchita or a mumra for shnei mekaveh chatarim? What would the difference be?
So fundamentally against, you know, belief in God, that if you do avodah zarah, then it's like, that's like the backbone of all Judaism.
Because that's what the whole religion is about, right? Like we saw, Chazal said it came up in the Parsha, it was in the Parsha Shir a few weeks ago. I believe that in the beginning of Parsha Shir, Chazal made the point that Kol HaKofer be'Avodah Zarah ki lamode b'chol HaTorah kula, and Kol HaMode be'Avodah Zarah ki lakofer b'chol HaTorah kula. So we get that. What about Shabbos? How does Shabbos fit in? So why is it the same thing?
You're denying that Hashem created the world.
Okay, so we recognize that Shabbos is not just a discrete set of prohibitions and a few obligations, but that Shabbos has a message to it. And that message is fundamental, even on a level that evokes the issue of what is our. What's interesting is that when it comes to Shabbos, we particularly focus on one who is Mechal Shabbos Beferhesia. That it's not simply the Avera that is the focus, but it's also the fact that somebody's willing to do the Chal Shabbos in public. And we find that public means even in front of the rabbi. That, he's not even embarrassed in front of the chief rabbi to be Mechal Shabbos. So that's where you get Chol Shabbos Farhesia. So why should we distinguish there specifically between the Farhesia and not? What do you think?
Yeah. There's a difference between the hachis and the teava.
Okay, so that maybe one has to be Michal Shabbos lahachis, and that lahachis is not going to make sense so much. Maybe this Averis specifically, you have to figure out exactly why, but this Averis specifically, it doesn't make sense that you do both lahachis and in private.
Right.
And that, okay. To see if that's the whole answer, though. What else? Gilad doesn't seem satisfied.
That just seems like it would be either way, let's say, or lahachis, probably.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like too compelling to say.
Okay, so unless we say that there's something special about Shabbos that we would expect that even if you have a teyavon to do whatever you want to do, so you're going to still have some sensitivity to not do so before Hesia. We have to figure out exactly what that means. And once we've now established that these categories exist, so why should they matter for Shechita purposes? So a Jew is a Jew, right? So what difference does it make?
It might teach us something about the nature of the mitzvah.
Okay, explain.
The status of the person. Maybe not, I don't want to say that maybe not everyone's allowed to do it because we do still have our first Mishnah, but maybe even though everyone's allowed to, it still might require something in the realm of Kavanah or something that a Mu'ur might not have.
Okay, so sharpen that a little bit. So you're saying that, Gilad, you want to sharpen it?
So yes, and add, I don't know if it's going to sharpen it.
Yeah, sharpen
it. I've been saying that we say in the first mission that if there are other people watching over them, so maybe these set of people would require somebody to be watching over them.
Okay, and then will that cover it or will that not cover it?
And then that would be the covering factor.
Are we assuming everything is in one category here? Like, does it make a difference whether you're a member of the Hachas, a Moti Oven, a member of the Davar Echad, a member of the everything?
I don't think we can make that assumption.
That it matters?
I think we have to assume that it does matter.
Right, so it does matter. So then what would it matter and what kind of things are bothering us? Why does this Hakol Shochet? So now all of a sudden I'm worried about a member. Why am I worried about a member? What's the possible considerations here? Sam? Sorry? Okay, so maybe the mummer has some kind of kavana. Mummer l'te'avon, will he have...
maybe somebody who's mummer l'achis, his shechita, he's going to try to do like with an iver.
Okay, you know, the fne'iver is an interesting question, right? Because the Gemara brings that up, l'gabe kusim. Right, in kusim, we also have to figure out exactly how they fit into this whole equation, because a kusi, on some level, should match some of these categories that we've already seen. We're not sure exactly what a kusi is, because it comes from a couple directions. A kusi, a ger on some level, or is he an incomplete ger? Or is he more comparable to a mummer, and that doesn't accept all principles of halacha? If a kusi doesn't accept, say, Torah Shebaal Peh, or does that get into apikoros that we haven't yet really discussed? And the Gemara, as Gilad is noting, the Gemara raises the issue that kusi maybe has a unique concern, legabe shechita, because even if the kusi does fully embrace and accept the directive of shechita, we don't know how he feels about lifnei iver lo sitei michshol. That is the mandate, which is a fascinating sugya. I don't know if we'll have an opportunity, we'll make an opportunity to discuss it in detail. It's really a very, very fascinating sugya. But just roughly speaking, if we had many years to learn the first Perek Chulin, I guess we could justify spending a day on Lifnei Iver from this kind of agav reference. But the idea of Lifnei Iver is that we believe that you're not allowed to enable somebody else to do an avera. And the details are many, but the basic idea is that you should not be tripping somebody up. So the Gemara tells us that we have a concern that even if the kusi fully believes in shechita, it maybe doesn't believe in lifnei iver. And therefore, he'll shecht badly, and he'll give it to you. So that becomes a very specific, functional kind of concern. And just parenthetically, part of the whole lumdus lifneiver, it's interesting, you have to figure out whether this affects it or not, is that lifneiver is the whole discussion in the Achronim, when we say that you're not allowed to help somebody do an avera, does that mean that you're not allowed to do the avera yourself or help somebody? It's a din in that avera. It basically broadens the idea of the avera, and it's essentially an accessory principle, that if you drive the getaway car, you can get arrested for bank robbery because you're helping the bank robbery. So too, if you help somebody do an avera, it's essentially an act of participation in that avera. Or should we say that no, it's not. That avera is distinct. But there's a separate idea that you're not supposed to trip people up. That's the literal translation of the pasuk. And you shouldn't trip them up spiritually either. So if I fed somebody non-kosher food, like the case here, so you're not in violation of the issur of non-kosher food. You're very careful about that. You never eat non-kosher food. But what you are in violation of is tripping up somebody. So it sounds like from our Gemara that they could be seen as two separate concepts, because the Kusi theoretically is careful about Shechita, but maybe not careful about feeding non-shechutim food to you. So then maybe Lifneiva really is distinct. It actually also has an afkamina for mummer as a definition. Because we said before that, say, if somebody's a mummer to be Machal Shabbos, so that gives you a status of, gives you a status mummer l'chal Torah kula. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger raised the question, what if you have somebody who's very careful personally about Shabbos, he's never violated Shabbos himself, but he regularly enables other people to be Machal Shabbos? Is he a mummer for Shabbos? Or should we say he's a mummer for Lifneiver, but not for Shabbos? And Nafkamina being, like we said, that mummer for Shabbos being mummer l'chol Torah kula. So the whole role here of Lifneiver is an important one to consider. But what that also highlights is that, okay, maybe some of these categories have unique issues. And maybe you'll have somebody who's capable of pulling off a good shechita, but if we want to know, can we eat from his shechita, we have something else to worry about. Yossi?
So, I guess just in general, mm-hmm. specifically for this also, when we're asking all these questions, are they fundamental questions or just a metzias type of question?
So maybe some one way and some the other way, right? And so maybe when it comes to some of these considerations, they are practical issues. And maybe when it comes to other, there's a more fundamental. So what possibilities in the realm of mummer, so what else could be? Which is it a fundamental issue? Is it a practical issue? It's depend what kind of mummer we're talking about. So what do you see here? Take one at a time. Let's say a mummer l'teyavon. What kind of concerns might you have?
He's
not going to shecht it, or maybe he's not going to shecht it properly. Say how much about that?
Just lack of care for the
right. Shechita. So then why should we ever let the mummer shecht mummer l'teyavon?
Right, he wouldn't mind shechting it properly. So
everything you're saying is correct, right? It depends. You know, on the one hand, if it's equal, if it's a whole idea of a mummer l'teyavon is that the mummer is not going to inconvenience himself for the halacha, or is not going to give up his interest because of the halacha. But if it's equally possible for him to observe the halacha and not, so then he will. So if he could shecht, he'll shecht. But then we get into details. We have to figure out. But what if he could shecht? It's a little bit of tircha. Yeah, Gilad?
Do we assume that in Mermel Tiavon, that if we set it up, like all the proper stuff for him, that he will always shecht properly?
Always, I mean, if the knife is...
If the knife is sharp, it's everything's shecht.
And then once it's equal, whatever, it's always going to.
So how do you, what do you think the din should be? Well, what are some technical issues here? Let's say you have a mummer, and he has a good knife, and he tells you, okay, I shechted the animal. Everything good? But one question we have to figure out is, what are the rules in general in halacha of ne'amanus? So when do you believe somebody and when do you not believe somebody? So I think we had referenced this a little bit last week or before that we know that when you have dinner at home, so do you require two kosher edim, like at a wedding, to tell you that the food is kosher? So why not? You have a rule, erech and nem b'sur, that one aid is enough. So as we'll probably discuss a little bit tomorrow, what that seems to mean really is that it's a whole different category of birur. Doesn't really require normal edus. When we say one is good enough, it's unlikely that means that, oh, it's the same thing as two edim, but here one works instead of two. But presumably it's a whole different system, as we'll see. But okay, erech and nem b'sur. So then that solves all our problems. The same way you can eat dinner when your mother serves you at home, you can eat from this guy and there's no issue. So why are you shaking your head? Why not?
Can we also say, though, that sometimes that's not true? Because if the case of like a wife, if I'm burning the food and she's not believed, is that a concern?
I don't know about wives burning the food, but I think what you might be getting at is that not everybody is believed. I mean, what if somebody is not accepting of that area of halacha? Right? If somebody does not subscribe to a certain area of halacha, so we find, the Mishnah says in Bechoris, we'll give you a look at this tomorrow, that somebody who's chashud bedavar, somebody who is not considered credible, is considered suspect in a certain area, so we don't necessarily trust him to claim that this area, everything is taken care of. So that's an inherent issue. But okay, so let's say he did everything right. But halachically, are we allowed to believe that? Or is there some other kind of process that we need to clarify?
Just to, this case, we're talking about somebody who's not necessarily careful, or somebody who's not.
There's a mummer that he, you know, he doesn't particularly insist on shechita. He'll eat the he'll eat from shechted food, or he'll shecht the animal himself when he's got a good knife and it's there, and the animal is still available for shechting. Fine, but if he's hungry and there's non-shechted meat around, he's going to eat that the same.
And we're assuming though he knows the halacha.
Yeah, there's also a part of our discussion here, but let's assume that he does. The Gemara deals with that separately, but let's assume that he does. Right, it's interesting here. Also, the question is, are there gradations? You know, okay, so somebody has such a taiva for pork. So, okay, so he's not swayed by the fact that the Torah says not to eat pork. But if he wants to eat beef, so doing it, will he do anything to inconvenience himself? Is it just like, he won't do any tircha? There's a difference between having to do a little bit of a tircha and something that there's no potential for him to be able to be machshir in the first place. Right? So let's say he's a mummer to eat chazer, l'teyavon, because he has such a taiva for chazer, and there's no alternative around. None of the beyond meat or whatever inventions, or Gemara says later on in this Masechta that there is something that tastes like chazer. But he has no alternatives, so okay, he's still plotting for chazer. He's going to eat the chazer regardless of the yisur. But maybe if it comes to beef, so, all right, it may take him a long time to shecht it properly, but since there is a path of heter, maybe he'll take that path of heter. It's presumably be a question of degree. So a part of the question, part of the assumption here is that a mumra l'teyavon is not going to be that the Gemara calls Shavi Katera V'Achali Surah, that if he has two options, one's kosher and one's not, he's not going to abandon the kosher one for the non-kosher one. But the question is, how equally available do they have to be? So we have a number of issues that need to be figured out regarding a mummer or l'teava. And probably tomorrow, you know, today we're just doing a few more minutes, they're just trying to get all the questions on the table, and tomorrow... So for tomorrow, I'm going to assume that you guys saw most of the Gemaras, although if you have a few minutes extra here and there, it's kedai just to plow through with the Gemaras, because they're all going to be relevant, and the more you have under your belt, the better anyway. But I'll give more specific Makaras tomorrow, so for tomorrow's Seder, you'll be able to see some of the specific sources inside. But I think this worked out pretty well as far as the pacing. But so one question we're going to have to figure out is, what are the issues of Mumr L'Teyavon? How can we give him Ne'emonus? And what exactly is the concern? So just briefly, in the 2 or 3 minutes that we have, but what about moving to Mumr L'Hachis? What are the potential issues there? Here maybe things become more complex. What's the issue with the Mumr L'Hachis? Or what might be the issue with the Mumr L'Hachis?
Even if the knife was checked, he might have just
washed
the sheets on purpose.
Okay, you know, so maybe that's one concern. Maybe it's still a technical concern that maybe he's so lahachis, he finds a way, and certainly you can passel a shechita with a good knife, right? So, you know, maybe he's going to intentionally sneak a psul into there. It's certainly possible. Right? Or is it about kavana? You know, so is it, and what kind of, we're talking about negative kavana, positive kavana? Well, so if we're talking about a lack of positive kavana, it's not clear how much he needs. But if we're talking about negative kavana, so we're saying that his lahachis is like a avodah zarah, is that the idea? Or that he will just pick an avodah zarah because that's a antagonistic act? Okay, so that's one thing we have to figure out, is the concern that essentially he is going to bring some other purpose into the shechita. Or is there an even broader concern than that? What broader concern could there be? So maybe there's a concern that a mumr lahachis, or a mumr l'chol Torah kula, or both, could at some level lose the status of a Yisrael. And if we need, let's say, either like the Rishonim say, we need a Bar Zvicha. Maybe he's not a Bar Zvicha. And we saw already the Tosfos that brought up that possibility. Right? We already saw a Tosfos on Gimel and Midbeis that brought in the Mumr L'Hachis together with the Akum, under the assumption that indeed he loses his Bar Zvicha status. Or maybe even like the Rambam, that maybe whatever psul there is for a avodah zarah extends to a mumr lahachis. So this idea that a mumr lahachis may somehow, or mumr l'chol Torah kula, may somehow lose his status as Yisrael for this purpose, for other purposes. So that's something that has very broad implications, and that's something that we'll have to figure out. And another thing we'll have to figure out then is to go into the question of apikoros and the question of philosophical concerns. Where does that fit in, and how exactly is that a part of the picture? And all of this, hopefully, we will make some serious progress in tomorrow. But I'll leave you with one more thing, and maybe this will be the first thing on the makoros so we'll give you tomorrow to look at. And think about this question. What do you need to do to establish yourself as a mummer? So we saw different references here, habitually, don't care about halacha at all. So what exactly is the process to determine somebody as a mummer? So that also is something that we'll need to figure out in order to proceed with this. So we'll hopefully start with that tomorrow. So just to quickly recap just what our issues are that we want to try to take. We want to figure out, how does one establish himself as a mummer? If one is a mummer l'teyavon, what is the issue, or what are the solutions that allow him to be involved in Shechita as a technical concern. What about Nemanus? How exactly is Nemanus feasible in his case? And then we want to figure out what the issue with the Mamre Lahachis. Does Mamre Lahachis also have some fundamental concern? Or does he not become a Bar Zvicha? Maybe even just for local reasons, if he doesn't care about this mitzvah, so then he's maybe not part of what a Bar Zvicha means. Or is it more than that? Is it Dino Ka'akum? And whatever soul Akum brings, the Mamre Lahachis brings also. And then how is that going to extend to philosophical issues, to issues of Epicurus and the like? So, God willing, we'll try to give some context and some background to all of that. All right, I wish everyone a wonderful day. Should be all the good things. Everybody.